Welcome. You are about to embark on a unique learning adventure from the Great Courses. Our courses are crafted to be entertaining journeys, both comprehensive and fascinating. They're designed to expand horizons, deepen understanding, and foster epiphanies in a broad array of subjects and university-level disciplines. The lecturers are university professors and subject matter experts carefully selected by the Great Courses and its customers for their intellectual distinction and exceptional abilities to teach. By listening for less than an hour a day, you can finish even the longest course in just weeks. Browse our catalogs or visit our website at thegreatcourses.com and imagine how much you can learn if you spent just 30 minutes a day for the next year in the company of some of the greatest minds in the world. These lectures are part of the Great Courses series. These lectures are titled, Why You Are Who You Are, Investigations into Human Personality. Your lecturer is Mark Leary. Dr. Leary is the Goronczyk Family Professor of Psychology and Neuroscience at Duke University, where he is the director of the Interdisciplinary Behavioral Research Center. He earned his master's and doctoral degrees in social psychology from the University of Florida. Dr. Leary is a fellow of the American Psychological Association, the Association for Psychological Science, and the Society for Personality and Social Psychology. The author of more than a dozen books, he blogs regularly on personality and social psychology for psychologytoday.com. Lecture 1. What is personality?
Imagine that you're walking across a supermarket parking lot, carrying two bags of groceries, and you trip. You stumble to the ground, the bags go flying, and your groceries scatter in all directions. You're not hurt, but you certainly do look like a klutz to all the people who saw you fall. How would you feel? Some people would probably feel a bit embarrassed, but after a moment they would just shrug it off, pick up their groceries, and go on their way. But other people would be so bothered by making a fool out of themselves that even after they got home, they would replay the incident in their heads again and again and feel embarrassed all over each time they thought about it. Some people might even be so mortified that they would jump in their car and flee the scene, leaving their groceries scattered in the parking lot. Why would an incident like that affect some of us so much more than others? Or suppose that you have a job that you love. You work hard, you do your job well, you keep your work area clean, and you're friendly to other employees and you're respectful to your boss. But you have a coworker who mystifies you. He routinely comes to work late, if he shows up at all, and he spends a large portion of his time socializing and goofing off instead of working. So this guy never gets things done on time, and his work is pretty shabby. But he mostly blames other employees and even his boss for things that he messes up. What makes somebody act like that? Or let's say you get into a discussion with someone about some controversial topic, say capital punishment. You and the other person disagree strongly, not only about whether we should have capital punishment, but about what the underlying issues are. You don't even seem to have the same fundamental values. Who should we be protecting? Society or the convicted criminal? Does it matter what kind of an environment the perpetrator grew up in? Should religious beliefs be part of the debate? The more you talk, the more heated the conversation gets, and the more you feel that the two of you come from different planets. Why do we often see the world so differently from the way that other people see it? Every day, we see countless differences between ourselves and other people in what we think, what we feel, and how we behave. And for me, therein lies the fascination of human personality. Although we all share some basic psychological characteristics as human beings, we show incredible diversity in our personalities as well. Maybe there's somebody else in the world who has exactly the same combination of traits and beliefs and motives and emotions that you do? But I doubt it. Even if you have an identical twin, you and your twin are not identical in your personalities. And not only is it fascinating to try to understand our own personalities, what we're like and how we got that way, but the quality of our lives depends in part on how well we can figure out what's going on with other people. If you're like me, I'm sure that there are people in your life whom you just don't get, like that coworker I described, or the person with whom you disagree about basic values. I'm hopeful that by the time you finish this course, you'll have some new insights into the nature of personality that might help you better understand both yourself and at least some of those other people. Well, what is personality? As psychologists use the term, personality involves those psychological characteristics that give people a distinct and somewhat stable and predictable style of responding to the world. I say somewhat stable and predictable because, as we'll discuss later, nobody acts the same way all the time. Well-adjusted people are flexible enough to accommodate to the demands of the situations in which they find themselves. Yet, as we look at your behaviors across different situations and over time, we can see that you have certain tendencies, tendencies to view things in certain ways, to have certain emotional reactions, to be motivated by particular things, and to behave in particular ways. Now, some of your tendencies you share with virtually all other human beings. They're part of human nature. Even though those characteristics aren't unique to you, they're still important in understanding some aspects of your personality. You have consistent tendencies in how you react that are universal human traits. But you also have many personality characteristics that make you different from lots of other people. To what extent are you outgoing and extroverted versus quiet and introverted? Are you generally an organized or disorganized person? Are you a morning person or an evening person? How much self-control do you usually have? People differ on these kinds of personality characteristics, and those differences help to create the kind of person you are and the kind of life you lead. The businessman and self-help guru, William Clement Stone, said that, quote, "There is very little difference in people, but that little difference makes a big difference." He was talking about whether people have a positive attitude, but his observation applies to personality more generally. Little differences in people's personalities can make big differences in their lives. Psychologists who want to understand personality want to understand those differences in people's thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. A basic assumption of psychology is that to understand people fully, to understand why they think what they think, feel what they feel, and do what they do, we have to focus both on their personal psychological characteristics and on the nature of the situation that they're in at the moment. This assumption was expressed most succinctly by psychologist Kurt Lewin almost a century ago when he said that, quote, "Behavior is a function of the person and the environment." All thoughts, all emotions, and all behaviors are influenced both by people's internal psychological characteristics, their personalities, and by the features of the situations in which they find themselves. Allow me to be a bit more specific, because this is an important point. Wherever you go, you carry with you a large, complex set of psychological characteristics. Traits, beliefs, emotional tendencies, motivations, values, other attributes that predispose you to respond in certain ways. But how you act also depends on the particular situation you are in at the time, not only the physical environment, but also the social context. For example, you'll react differently depending on the number of other people who are present, who they are, and what kind of relationship they have with you. And your behavior is affected by social norms and the role that you're in at the time, and by whether you think that certain actions will be rewarded in some way or whether they'll be punished. It's interesting, and even a bit puzzling to me, that historically, these two sets of factors that influence behavior, those inside the person and those in the environment or situation, have been studied by two different groups of researchers. The field of personality psychology has focused mostly on internal, psychological traits and processes, and the field of social psychology has focused most on social, situational determinants of behavior. This division of labor has never made much sense. If, as Lewin suggested, all behavior is a function of the person and the environment, we ought to be studying both sets of factors together. In my career, I've always been a hybrid of personality psychology and social psychology, and my own research has explored both personality and situational variables. Because we can cover only so much in 24 lectures, this course is going to focus mostly on people's personal characteristics, all the stuff going on inside us that makes us who we are psychologically. As I think you'll see as we go along, though, what goes on inside us and what goes on around us are difficult to separate. And the fact that human behavior is influenced by so many factors from within and without is what makes the study of human behavior such a challenging and captivating endeavor. And it's not just the sheer number of factors involved. It's that they are constantly changing and that they often interact to affect our behavior. Some parts of our personalities don't really make much of a difference at all until some situational factor pushes a button that kicks some aspect of personality into gear. Having been in this field for a long time, I know that many people have trouble seeing psychology as a science, in the same way that they see, say, physics or chemistry or biology as sciences. For a lot of people, psychology somehow seems too loose to be scientific. There are a couple of reasons for that. The first, as I just mentioned, is the sheer number of factors that influence any particular behavior. The second is that many of those factors are very difficult to measure and study. Behavioral scientists usually can't isolate all of the variables that are influencing a research participant at any given time. Every participant who walks into a psychological study comes in with a complex personality that's based on years and years of influences that we can't possibly know about or measure. That's not like a chemist studying some chemical compound where every sample of that compound is essentially the same. Imagine if the objects of study in the physical sciences, such as chemicals and atomic particles and rocks and cells, had individual personalities. And worse, what if every object of study in the physical sciences could think, and by thinking, change its own behavior even while it was being studied? That doesn't mean that psychology doesn't adhere to scientific principles. Our conclusions in psychology are based on careful, systematic research that's aimed toward understanding how personality works. And we know a great deal about many psychological processes. We can even predict how people will act in specific situations. But there's much more error in our predictions than there is in the physical sciences, because the objects of our research, the people we study, are so different from each other in so many different ways, and they are constantly changing in ways that physical objects usually don't. I've often thought that psychological science is a bit like the science of weather forecasting. Meteorology deals with many dynamic, interacting systems that unfold over time, much like human behavior as people live their lives. And like weather forecasting, psychology is fundamentally probabilistic. A meteorologist with sufficient data can tell us the probability that it will rain 3 days from now. And a personality psychologist with sufficient data can tell us the probability that a certain person or a certain kind of person will lose his temper the next time he's insulted. But both the weather and human behavior are influenced by so many variables that are unfolding over time that we usually can't say for sure whether it will rain 3 days from now or say for sure whether a particular person will get angry the next time he's insulted. I want you to keep the probabilistic nature of personality psychology in mind as we go through the course. Occasionally, I'm going to say something that doesn't ring true in your own experience. I might make some statement about how introverts and extroverts differ, and you'll think to yourself, no way, that doesn't describe my experience at all. But remember that we're talking about probabilistic patterns that have been shown to apply in general. Because every individual's personality is so wonderfully complex, any particular conclusion won't apply to everybody. Although all behavior is a function of the characteristics of the person and the characteristics of the situation, from the earliest days of behavioral science, researchers have debated which of these influences is most important in understanding human behavior. Is your behavior influenced more strongly by your personality or by the situation that you're in at the time? As in many such debates, there have been extreme voices on both sides. And, as in most such debates, the best answer is that it depends. For one thing, the degree to which personality is important in understanding a particular behavior depends on the strength of the situation that a person is in. A strong situation is one in which situational pressures are so strong that there's little or no room for personality to play a role. If a person is sitting in a worship service in a church or temple or synagogue, and an observer asks, "Why is that person just sitting there so quietly and attentively?" The answer is almost entirely situational. The person is doing what situational norms say people have to do in that context. Personality might have been involved in the formation of the person's religious beliefs or in the decision to go to church on that particular day. But once the service starts, the situation is so strong that personality doesn't matter much. Everybody pretty much acts the same. Now contrast that with going to the beach. People do all sorts of things at the beach, and for all kinds of reasons. They might be swimming or playing in the sand or reading a book or tossing a frisbee or jogging or walking or collecting shells or talking to other people or just lying in the sun. The beach provides a relatively weak situation, so differences among people and what they decide to do are easy to see. So whether personality or situational factors are most important in what people do depends in part on the strength of the situation that they're in. But it also depends on the person's personality, because the degree to which people are responsive to situational influences is itself a personality characteristic. That is, people differ in the degree to which their behavior is affected by situational pressures. Some people are generally more affected by situational requirements, and other people are affected more by their internal psychological dispositions. We'll talk more about that personality characteristic later. So, whether personality or the situation exerts a larger influence in any given context depends on the person's personality and on the situation. But even knowing that sometimes the situational influences are more important and sometimes personality is more important, can we say which one is more important overall in affecting human behavior? People's personal characteristics or the characteristics of specific situations? To gauge the relative impact of these influences, researchers have turned to statistical analyses that tell us the proportion of variability in behavior that can be accounted for by personality versus situational influences. We'll be using this concept of proportion of variability throughout the course because it tells us how strongly related a particular personality characteristic is to behaviors or emotions or to other characteristics. So let me briefly introduce this idea here. If we look at any particular behavior, let's say the behavior of becoming angry, we see a great deal of variability in how often different people get angry and in how angry they tend to get. Some people rarely get angry. Others get angry virtually every day. And most of us fall somewhere in between. What accounts for these differences, this variability in the tendency to become angry? Well, some of the causes are situational. Some people's lives are filled with more events that tend to make people angry. If you have a rebellious teenager, or you are often treated unfairly, or you have a frustrating job, or you're in a troubled relationship, you probably get angry more often than if you don't confront these kinds of maddening situations every day. So situational factors account for some of the variability we see in anger across people. But we also know that some people will get angry more than other people do in exactly these same situations. Many personality characteristics are associated with a lower or higher tendency to become angry. So personality characteristics also account for some of the variability we see in anger across people. Some of the variability in anger, then, is accounted for by the fact that people are in different situations, and some of the variability in how angry people get is accounted for by personality differences that make some people more or less likely to get angry than other people. To estimate the total variability that we observe in anger or any reaction, researchers use a proportion that can range from 0 to 1. You can think of it as a percentage that runs from 0% to 100% of the variability in some behavior. Now, 0% would indicate that none of the variability that we observe across people in some behavior, such as anger, can be accounted for by whatever variable we're looking at. And 100% would indicate that all of the variability that we observe in that behavior is due to whatever variable we're studying. So we have a statistic that tells us how strongly some variable or set of variables is related to some reaction that we're interested in. It turns out that across most of the behaviors and emotions that have been studied, the proportion of variability in behavior that is accounted for by situational versus personality influences is about equal. Of course, it depends on the strength of the situation, but in general, personality is about as relevant to understanding people's thoughts, emotions, and behavior as situations are. Personality characteristics and situational factors account for about the same amount of variability we see in people's reactions overall. That's not the whole story, though. It's important to understand that the effects of personality and situations on behavior are more complex than just the fact that situations affect behavior and personality factors affect behavior. As I mentioned, personality and situational factors often interact to influence how people respond. When personality and situations interact, how a particular situation affects people's reactions depends on their personality. A single situation can have different effects on different kinds of people. As an example, let's consider the causes of delinquent behavior in teenage boys. On one hand, we know that situational factors affect delinquency. A boy who happens to live in a crime-ridden neighborhood and who has friends who are involved in crime is more likely to become a juvenile offender than boys who live in neighborhoods with less crime. That's a situational effect. But at the same time, boys with certain personalities have a higher tendency to behave badly than boys with other personalities. For example, we know that boys who are highly impulsive, who have trouble controlling themselves, are more likely to get into trouble than less impulsive boys are. That's a personality effect. But situations and personality can interact so that the effects of the situation on delinquent behavior differ depending on the boys' personalities. You might be wondering how we study such a thing. Well, a study was conducted that tested exactly what I've been talking about, how impulsivity and the quality of neighborhoods are related to delinquent behavior. Researchers recruited a sample of over 500 fourth grade boys and measured the boys' level of impulsivity and also recorded the socioeconomic characteristics of the neighborhoods in which the boys lived. So they had measures of both personality and situational factors. The researchers also got indicators of the boys' delinquent behavior, not only from the boys themselves, but also from their teachers and their primary caregivers, usually their parents. The results of the study showed that impulsivity predicted delinquency as expected, but only for boys who lived in poor neighborhoods. To say it differently, being in a poor neighborhood was related to higher delinquency only for boys who were already impulsive. Non-impulsive boys in poor neighborhoods were no more likely to be juvenile offenders than non-impulsive boys in better neighborhoods. In addition, being impulsive was not associated with greater delinquency for boys who grew up in better neighborhoods. This is an example of a person-by-situation interaction, because the situational effects of living in a poor neighborhood increase juvenile offending only for boys with a certain personality. The situation didn't have much of an effect on boys who were low in impulsivity. We'll be seeing many of these kinds of person-by-situation interactions as we go through the course. As we survey the personality landscape, we're going to have two primary goals. One is to understand many of the most important personality variables that make people different from one another. And by most important, I mean that we'll be looking at variables that help to account for the largest amount of variability that we observe in people's behavior. The traits and motives and emotional tendencies and ways of looking at oneself and the world that help to make you, you, and me, me, and that make you and me different in certain ways. Once you learn about these personality characteristics, you'll start to understand things about people's behavior that you might not have realized before. And you should be able to make better sense out of some of the things that you see people do. We can understand many things about people by identifying and understanding the characteristics that predispose them to be that way. Our second goal will be to explore the reasons that people end up with the characteristics that they have. So after we examine many of the basic traits, motives, beliefs, values, and emotional tendencies that make people different from each other, we'll tackle the question of where all of this variability in personality comes from. To answer this question, we'll be drawing upon explanations at several levels of analysis, none of which can fully address it by themselves. We'll start with basic biological processes that underlie personality, first by talking about evolutionary processes, and then about how genes affect personality and the biochemical processes in the brain that are involved in thought, emotion, and behavior. Evolutionary genetic and neural levels of analysis provide biological clues regarding why people differ from each other, but they don't fully explain what causes people to develop different personalities. For that part of the story, we'll talk about child development and how parents affect their children's personalities. We'll examine how aspects of personality are learned. We'll consider personal experiences that can change people's personalities. And we'll also look at social and cultural influences. None of these approaches can tell us everything we want to know about personality. So we'll be moving back and forth among these different levels of analysis. In addition to learning about personality and its causes, let me mention two other things that I hope you will take away from our time together. I hope that learning about the human personality will increase your appreciation of, and even respect for, psychological diversity. You already know that people differ psychologically from one another. But in our daily lives, we often regard some of those differences negatively. We often don't quite understand why people are like they are. And we often wish that they were different. And we usually wish that they were a little more like us. It would just make life so much easier if other people saw the world like we did and reacted to things the way that we do. But learning about personality helps us to see that personality is just our personal way of adapting to life. Because of our genetics and beliefs and experiences, we each develop ways of thinking, feeling, and behaving that reflect our way of dealing with the daily opportunities and challenges that we encounter in life. And different people will find different ways of adapting. Now, none of them are perfect. We all have parts of our personalities that we wish we didn't have. But maybe you'll find other people's behavior a little more sensible once you realize why they do what they do. And finally, although this is by no means a self-help course, I do hope that whatever insights you get about personality help you understand and deal more effectively with those occasions on which your personality or the personalities of other people create problems for you. We all face many kinds of problems in life, but fundamentally, a very large proportion of those problems are people problems, in the sense they involve problematic behaviors. And most of those people problems are fundamentally personality problems. There's a saying that people sometimes use when somebody has behaved in some unusual or inexplicable way. They say, well, I guess it takes all kinds. And this saying emphasizes that people have different personalities and beliefs and ways of doing things, and that we really ought to accept all of those differences. Well, I'm not really sure that it actually does take all kinds. Sometimes it's really hard to see a difficult person's redeeming qualities, no matter how hard we try. But the fact is, whether or not it really takes all kinds, they're all here anyway, us included. And the more we know about all these different kinds of people, including ourselves, the better off we'll all be.